This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello and welcome to Saver, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about blue mussels.
The craving is real, for sure.
Oh, it is. Oh, absolutely. And actually, this is a topic that I suggested because I had just had some very good mussels. And I was like, let's talk more about mussels.
Oh, jealous. I wondered if you suggested it because we recently, the joyous nerds that we are, got our D&D crew together, saw the movie, and went to a restaurant where a bunch of people were ordering mussels.
Mm-hmm.
I've been craving them. I have a friend who, I love this about him, he always orders mussels. I don't care what like the situation is.
If mussels are on the menu, that is what he orders.
It could be literally like, I don't think we have time for you to do this. Doesn't matter.
All right.
Mussels are happening.
Aww. Oh, that's delightful, though.
It's actually really endearing. I really love it. I do love mussels, but I also, every time I have them, I realize how much I love, like, buttery, savory sauces soaked in, like, bread.
Yeah.
Soaking up those sauces and the mussel, the whole thing.
The whole thing is lovely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a perfect little bite. They're just very tasty little creatures.
Mm-hmm. And they do soak up the flavor very well.
They do. Nice white wine sauce in there.
Ugh. Oh, my gosh. Well, they're also fascinating. I can't wait to talk about them.
Hoofda, yeah.
Yeah. You can see our other episodes on similar seafood things, like oysters and scallops, I think would be good.
Sure, yeah. Maybe the big seafood industry, big fish industry episode.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe even escargot, which we'll talk about a little bit.
Okay, sure.
Yes. Well, I guess that brings us to our question.
Sure.
Blue mussels. What are they?
Well, blue mussels are a type of marine mollusk with a hinged two-piece shell. The shell is commonly blue-black in color. Hence the name blue mussels. They are often served in that shell, as most of the shells will naturally pop open when they're cooked, and the edible bit inside will at least partially loosen from the shell. At which point, they'll contain just a small bite of meat that's tender and slightly sweet and slightly briny and savory. They can be roasted or steamed, and they're often served in a broth or stew of some kind that can be sipped or sopped up with bread. They're like if a pistachio was a seafood. They're like a lot of shellfish kind of resists being eaten Like crabs, for example, do not want you to consume them. They're kind of mad about it. But I feel like mussels are like, oh, please go ahead. I come in my own serving tray. Here you go. They're just right. They're just a perfect little bite. Mm.
Yes, they are. Oh. And pistachios. That's perfect comparison, Lauren.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. And okay, like, heck, but biology is weird. I was originally going to say, heck, but shellfish are weird. But, like, look at us. Like, we have toes. What's that about? I don't know. Mm-hmm. But blue mussels. All right. So there are at least three species in the genus Mytilus that are referred to as blue mussels, as opposed to green mussels or other various kinds of mussels. They are filter-feeding bivalves that grow in shallow seawater, like coastal areas with temperate to cold climates. Their shells are sort of teardrop-shaped and will be black to blue-black to brownish on the outside and white and pearly on the inside. They're generally harvested when they're about 2 to 4 inches long, but can grow up to about twice that size. And they keep their shells closed or mostly closed with this strong cylindrical muscle that is not part of what you're eating usually.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. As adults, they are mostly sedentary. They sort of lock into place on the seafloor or other available stuff like ropes that mussel farmers might put out in the water or even the bottom of ships or other human structures. Though they can move around if they need to, because to lock in, they create these adhesive strings that are called byssal threads. And if you've ever seen on a mussel shell or heard about a mussel's beard, That's what we're talking about. And it's not like a full Santa Claus beard. It's a little bit wispy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From their latched on spot, though, they eat by filtering water through their shells and pulling out plankton and other microorganisms, little bits of tasty stuff that are floating in the water. And in these ways, they're actually really great for marine ecosystems because they help keep the water clean through that filtration. And they can build up like a pretty serious bed or colony of shells and threads and silt and mud that'll shelter coasts from rough water and also provide habitat for other sea creatures. Because they will also take in pollutants like microplastics, they are also useful for studying pollution in waterways, and more on that throughout.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of a life cycle. Okay, adults will spawn during the spring and summer. That is, males release sperm and females release eggs out into the water. And if they meet under the right conditions, a larva will begin to develop. And I say a larva, but females release like 50 million to 200 million eggs in a single go. So it's almost certainly going to be plural larvae. And these are also called seed or spat in the fishing industry. Lots of them will get eaten by other larger marine life. But if they make it, they'll develop just free swimming for a couple of weeks and then metamorphize a couple of times and will be ready to settle in around other blue mussels and start growing their protective shell. In nature, they'll do this on the sea floor, but in aquaculture, you can encourage them to lock in on a bunch of different kinds of substrates, mostly various forms of rope setups. And for the next 2 or 3 years, they'll grow and mature. They grow their shells in concentric layers from the inside out. So on the outside, you might see little ridges or rings that represent different previous sizes of the animal shell. They're harvested in the winter months when they're putting their resources towards bulking up to survive the cold rather than towards spawning. Also useful for winter harvesting, some microbes that can cause food poisoning in us are less active or less populous during the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to the point that we are ostensibly a food show. So the meat of blue mussels will be like yellow to orange in color. And when cooked, it firms up into a sort of little oblong ball sort of shape and mostly separates off from the shell. And you can roast or steam or boil them right in their shells and serve them like that in a broth or stew. Maybe you stuff them with breadcrumbs or other tasty things, and they'll be tender and meaty, like not very chewy, savory, sweet, briny. And they're fairly delicate in flavor, so they can go well with either like a really delicate kind of sauce or a really strong kind of sauce, like anything from like a nice bright white wine and butter thing to like a beer and onion thing to like a garlic and tomato thing. Or you could, you know, just split them open and pass them under a broiler, fill them with cheese. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever you want. Anything
I want
you like.
All of it.
Right?
All of it sounds so good.
All right, we're adding like a full mussel course to our...
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'm so excited. Yes. Well, what about the nutrition?
They're a good source of protein and have a little bit of a good fats to them, some of those omega-3s that you hear about, good source of minerals. You know, your final nutrition mileage may vary based on your, like, muscle-to-butter ratio. Eat a vegetable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we do have some numbers for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One number I found valued the global blue mussel aquaculture industry at $1.5 billion. $1 billion mm-hmm. a year.
Yeah, yeah. The overall mussel industry is like four times that or something to that extent, like 3 to 4 times that, which is why I cut us down to just blue mussels for today. Yeah. And as of 2016, anyway, the United States alone was producing about $10 million worth of mussels a year, which was equal to some 894,000 pounds.
Hoof. Mm-hmm. Hoof.
There are a number of mussel festivals in places that harvest them with activities like chowder tastings and aquaculture tours.
I want to go.
Yes, yes, yes. Some of the contraptions that they come up with for getting the mussels to grow on these suspended rope and kind of cage situations are really beautiful and fascinating. And I've seen a few larger constructions that incorporate that kind of structure with also growth for seaweed and also growth for stuff like a steelhead trout. So really fascinating.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, a single mussel can filter about 15 gallons of water a day.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of related, more than 50 countries have data collected from mussels to monitor the quality of seawater. And some of these countries have uninterrupted data starting from like the 1960s.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And we are going to be talking more about that because fascinating history behind it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which, speaking of, we do have a lot of history for you.
Oh, we do. And we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry.
No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, as we've discussed in episodes about oysters and things like that, mussels are very old. Mm-hmm. For a long time. Ancestors.
As a creature, they have been around for a while. Mm-hmm.
They have. And humans have been eating them for a while, especially along the Northern Atlantic, the Mediterranean, and the North and South Baltic Seas. People have been harvesting them and consuming mussels for thousands of years. Indigenous North Americans use them for food and supplies. Blue mussel shells dating back to at least 6,000 BCE have been discovered in kitchen middens. So, long time. But most of the time they were harvested from wild beds, especially in Europe, which is where a lot of this information I was able to find came from. And people, they not only ate them, but they also used them as bait to catch fish and also fertilizer. Huh. And I had never heard of this, but they also used the threads, that beard that you talked about, Lauren.
Yeah. From
like really large blue mussels, they would collect it, they would dry it, they would spin it to make something that they called sea silk.
Whoa, what?
That's so cool.
That sounds very tedious.
It sounds very tedious and also like something you would read in a fantasy novel. Like,
yes.
Yes. Cool. And it was really, really strong, but it was also very fine and light. Like a lot of accounts described how easily it could be folded up. And how easily it could be stored. Some sources suggest that ancient Greek and Roman emperors may have worn robes or cloaks that were made out of sea silk. And perhaps even King Tutankhamun may have worn sea silk garments. Other sources allege that it was mentioned on the Rosetta Stone, that perhaps it was the fabric of the cloth that God instructed Moses to lay on the first altar. A lot going on with it. However, it's really not commonly made anymore. It wasn't really back then either. But in 2015, the BBC reported on Yara Vigo, the last woman who makes sea silk. And it was a really, really fascinating article. She lives in Sardinia. And in spring, she would go out on about 300 to 400 dives accompanied by the local Coast Guard because the mussels there are a protected species. And she did all of this to collect about 200 grams of these threads, all without harming the blue mussels. She doesn't sell what she makes, but she gives it away to those who need help. She told the BBC in this article, it would be like commercializing the flight of an eagle. The byssus is the soul of the sea. It is sacred.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Vigo claimed that Harad the Great's great-granddaughter, Princess Berenice, brought the tradition of sea silk to the region in the first century CE, because there was a lot of like, how did this tradition start? How did it get tied up with religion and how her history, her understanding of how this got passed down through her family? Until Mussolini came onto the scene, several Italian women did work with these threads and some even tried to make a business out of it. But it just never worked. It was like basically too complicated.
I can see why. Yes.
Yes. Yes. But I had never heard of that. That's really interesting. Listeners, as always, if you have any more information about that or any experience.
Yeah. Or if it has been written into some kind of fantasy story that I have missed.
Right. Yes. 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 Please let us know. But let us come back to the main outline. Yes. The Picius included two recipes for mussels. Records suggest that the French were some of the first to farm mussels in the 13th century. And to do so, they implanted these wooden poles called bouchots and estuary mud, and the mussels would grow alongside the poles. A popular legend credits a shipwrecked Irishman named Patrick Walton for coming up with this idea. As legend has it, he found himself washed up in the Bay of Aiguillon in the early 13th century after fleeing Ireland rather quickly due to some legal trouble he was in. Mm-hmm. Yes, and he was in need of sustenance to survive. So using what he had on hand and what he could scrounge up, he erected some wooden poles in the mud with a net stretched between them with the idea that he would catch migrating birds. And it sounds like he didn't have the best luck with that, but he did notice that mussels were growing and flattening alongside the wooden poles. So soon enough, he pivoted from trying to catch these migrating seabirds to growing mussels along the poles, and he erected more and more of them to do so. And the technique was adopted throughout the French Atlantic coastline and is still in use in some areas to this day, though with some improvements, perhaps, obviously. But other people say he was not the first cultivator of mussels in Europe by a long shot, and that, they were cultivated in Italy as far back as 500 BCE, when people would use bundles of sticks or rope lowered into water for the mussels to grow on. Two other methods originated nearby. I couldn't find as much information as I wanted to about them. But in Spain, people figured out how to grow mussels on long, heavy ropes, while in Northern Europe, they realized they could grow mussels on bottom culture plots. So people were invested and interested in learning how to get more mussels.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. 15th century cookbooks out of France contained recipes for mussels. They were typically steamed and seasoned, spiced, buttered. They were recommended in stews, as well as all kinds of things, really. It was really interesting. But I did get the vibe. I don't know if you got this vibe, Lauren, that they were seen as the poor man's oyster or even a replacement for escargot if you couldn't get it. Like, not necessarily looked down upon. In some instances, people were really saying, like, y'all are missing out not eating these. But seen as not as good or just not as well known.
Maybe like a second class protein, sort of. Like, well, like there are these sort of fancier ones, and this one is a little bit more common. Not not necessarily like, oh, common. But just, you know.
It was, I don't feel like I've come across the way that they were written about so often in these episodes. Because normally it's like, oh, this is a rich person thing or not. But this one was much more kind of like, no, it's really good and we should all be eating it. But also, it's not as good as an oyster. Yeah.
Certainly, I haven't come across the kind of like waxing poetic about mussels the way that I have about some other food products. So,
yes. I just thought that was interesting. And this brings us to this, which is also fascinating. Records show that blue mussels were one of the first organisms studied basically to get a read on the environmental health of seawater going back as far as 1886. Wow.
Huh.
Yeah. And the 19th century is also when overfishing of blue mussels became a real concern. A part of this was the growing practice of renting mussel culture plots that led to the depletion of natural beds. So just kind of mucking about with the environment of them. Mm-hmm. Though mussels were available in North America, non-Native Americans pretty much ignored them as a food source until the 20th century. Apparently, a part of this had to do with fears around getting sick from eating them. With the price of clams rising, though, and exposure to different dishes using mussels that came with influxes of immigrants, producers made a concerted effort to make mussels more mainstream in the U.S., which seems to have paid off. It did not come without consequences, but it seems to have paid off. Yeah. In the 1970s, mussel fishing technology improved, especially around suspended rope long lines. That same decade, hatchery-produced seeds were used in China for the first time.
Back on the environmental side, in 1975, the Mussel Watch as like an official way of monitoring global oceanic ecosystems was proposed. Note that this does involve many species of mussels, not just blue mussels. Yeah.
Right. And then jumping way ahead, in 2006, researchers out of the University of New Hampshire discovered that the local blue mussel had evolved new defense mechanisms to combat an invasive predator, the Asian shore crab, in only 15 years. So when this species of crab invaded the east coast of the U.S., they were more aggressive and stronger than a lot of the predators the local blue mussel population had faced, so they didn't really have a way to defend themselves against these crabs. However, they evolved so that when they detect the presence of a crab, they grow a thicker shell in a few months, which makes it harder for the crab to crack it open and eat them. This whole thing made headlines because typically evolving like that takes way longer, like way longer than that. And it's so interesting. I really recommend the whole article about how they were able to test this. And also just the defense mechanism is very interesting. It's like a chemical that the mussel picks up on in the water. And it's like, uh-oh.
It's like, oh, no.
Crap. And I think
red
it's
alert.
Like the energy from procreating goes into making the crab thicker. It's really the crab thicker. It goes into making the shell thicker. So it's really, really interesting. Highly recommend. According to a 2016 report, the wild blue mussel population along the Gulf coastline, which in this case, because I'm from the South, I was like, what? No, in this case, it means Cape Cod to the Canadian border, has declined by 60%. On top of that, these mussels now cover less than 15% of the intertidal zone compared to the two-thirds that they used to cover. Researchers believe that this is due to the warming climate and over-harvesting. Ocean acidification is also weakening those Bissell threads, which means they can't hold on.
Yeah.
They can't stay lodged as well as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is a bunch of research into those Bissell threads, for like materials science, because the way that they're constructed is really fascinating. It's like a really it's a really complex scaffolding of proteins and this glue that necessarily works underwater. So that's pretty cool. Another cool thing, research has shown that these Bissell threads collect metals from the water, like hypothetically to strengthen themselves, makes sense. But it's possible that scientists could collect Bissell threads that are either a byproduct of the seafood industry or just of natural populations and use them to purify metal polluted water.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Oh. Oh, mussels. Oh, mussels.
I did not know that we would spend as much of this episode talking about mussel beards as,
me
as we have done.
Me either. But I've loved it. I've loved it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I think that's what we have to say about blue mussels for now.
It is. It is. We would love to hear from you, though. And speaking of, we do have some listener mail for you.
And we will get into that after we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks. But I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Snowmail.
Yeah,
muscles. I tried to get to the bottom of the etymology, and then I got so confused.
Didn't even look. Okay, all right.
There is some theory that it has to do with, like, muscles.
Like musculature? Yeah.
Yeah. But it sounded like no one was too sure about
it. All right. Well, so. I'll see if I can look into it and maybe provide an update.
Yes. Oh, please.
Okay.
Mike wrote, catching up on some recent episodes, and I just finished listening to the Sherry episode, and I knew I had to write in. My wife and I live near the Finger Lakes wine region here in central New York and frequent the area very often, and one of our favorite wineries, Ravine's Wine Cellars, actually produces a Sherry-style fortified dry wine.
Ooh.
Ooh. We fell in love with it as a nightcap type of drink, enjoyed neat, just a few years ago when Ravine's released their inaugural vintage of it. The winery fittingly calls it Floor?
Yeah.
And it's always a fun one to share with newcomers to the style when we have guests over at our place, if we happen to have it on hand. I also always get a good laugh watching the faces of unsuspecting visitors at the winery when they choose the Floor as part of their tasting and clearly had no clue what they were getting themselves into. Now that Ravine's just recently released their second vintage of Floor, I'm super curious about trying it as a substitute for whiskey in an old-fashioned or Manhattan-style cocktail, which are typically my go-tos after listening to the episode. Thanks for all the nerding out and deep dives you continue to do. We love the episodes, and it's always been a great mini-escape from real life for us to enjoy.
Hmm.
P.S. I'd be remiss not to link to the Floor on Ravine's website, as the bottle only costs $30 in case you'd like to try. Even better, my admittedly biased opinion is that you should absolutely come visit in the Finger Lakes region in the future. Incredible food and beverage scene with a primary focus on all local ingredients and sourcing as true to farm to table as anywhere in the country, and beautifully moderate temperatures during the late spring through early autumn. Well worth a trip.
Ah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, right? Okay.
Sounds great. Yes. I've been craving some nice weather. We've had our weather in Atlanta has been bouncing all over the place is what I'll say.
That is true, as Atlanta is wont to do. Mm-hmm. But the past couple days for sure have been just aggressively gorgeous. Very nice. Just mm-hmm. sunny and cool without being cold.
Yeah. Yeah. It's making me, again, I've been craving fresh seafood for a while, enjoyed mm-hmm. outside with a yeah. glass of wine or something. That's, mm-hmm. I need that in my life soon. So.
Yeah. Oh, and I bet that a nice dry white sherry would be so good with mussels.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Ooh, and in like the sauce.
Yeah.
Oh
my gosh. Okay. All right. Goals. Arik wrote, listened to the Bach episode this morning and loved it. The puns were amazing. So many good ones. And yeast poop. Anyway, it brought back memories. Bachs are great, but as you mentioned, you don't see them all that often. I looked at my Untappd list and I've only had 19 out of the 1,350 plus unique I've checked in. Don't worry, drink responsibly. That number is over 9 years, nine plus years. Also, I like to do tasting flights. Now I'm going to be on a search for more Bachs. They can be wonderfully bready at times and are definitely an enjoyable drink. Also, love how Lauren keeps giving the DM ideas. Can't wait to hear how that turns out.
I can't wait either. I can't wait either. I have like the long con is finally coming.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited.
Oh, no.
It's all based on something you said.
Perhaps years
ago.
I know that it's collaborative storytelling that we are doing together, that mm-hmm. it's not truly you versus us, but sometimes it's you versus us. And you are a very kind and gentle DM, and I don't think that you're going to do anything. You're not going to like perm the party. Like, you're not going to kill us all horribly or anything like that. Unless we do something very, very, very silly. Mm-hmm. But I also fear, and I think rightfully, because I understand the kind of stories that you tell. And sometimes they really go places.
They certainly do. Oh, we're going places, Lauren. I cannot wait.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Cool.
Well, and also related, I do try to do related, like, themed beers to whatever session we're doing. And I was looking the other day for whenever we get to play next. But I was looking for Bachs. And I could really only find, like, two or three. And that was at, like, a specialty store, not just like a grocery store. So it is kind of, I did not have as much success as I thought I was going to have, but.
Sometimes they can be a little bit hidden away, but also they're just a less popular style than many others. Certainly when I was talking to one of my beer friends about the Bach episode, he was like, well, we should just go to Brick Store in Decatur. It's Brick Store being, if you have not heard of it, I assume that everyone in the country who's into beer has, because it's typically listed like at the top of beer bars in the country. He was like, oh yeah, they have this one and this one and this one over there, so we can go.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
I will say a lot of you listeners have written in about Bachs, so it struck a chord.
Heck yeah.
So keep those messages coming. Any recommendations, keep those coming. If you have mussel recipes.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. I've never cooked mussels myself.
No, I don't think I have either. And I'm ready.
All right. Yeah, let's go.
Yes. Please let us know. You can email us. Thanks to both of these listeners who already did, but you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico is home to a thriving culinary scene based on products and traditions from the native Taino, African, and Spanish peoples that have influenced it.
When you go, there are a host of restaurants, bars, breweries, distilleries, farms, and coffee houses to dig into, from five-star experiences to local favorites.
No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com, that's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.